So we're starting with Tehillim 116 in Pasuk Vav. This is where we left off last week. And we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu protecting all manner and variety of people, including, says David HaMelech, a very famous Pasuk, Shomer Pitayim, Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects the simple. Okay, now it's very interesting. We're all familiar with the famous pasuk of Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the singular of the word Pitayim is Peti, Pei Tav Yud, and it, unlike the word Tam, Tav Mem, right? Tam can have a pejorative association or a positive association. So, example, if we say Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, it doesn't mean that he's a simpleton, but it means that he was straight, he was direct. I believe it's Rashi who says that's in contrast to Esav, okay, who was is considered Arum. Arum means shrewd, crafty. Right, just the way the Nachash, by the way, was described in Sefer Bereishit. Right, so in contrast to that, Yaakov is Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. Pitayim, unfortunately, are people who are simple. There's a whole category of people that exist that have, at the most, average IQs, and many of them have below average IQs. So you would think that, so to speak, they might not receive Hashem's protection for whatever reason, even though one's IQ is, of course, not dependent upon choice, right? But says David HaMelech, no. As part of, although David HaMelech doesn't say this, but I would say this, as part of Hashem's Rachmanut, right? He's Shomer Pitayim, okay? Hashem. Now, why am I saying this is specifically Rachmanut? Because, notice it doesn't say Shomer Pitayim Elokim, right? Elokim, of course, would be Midat Hadin, but it's Shomer Pitayim Hashem. Hashem protects the simple. Now, it is also conceivable that you could look at it this way, that not everybody is sophisticated in all aspects of their life. So let's take, for example, a car. I would say that your average Jewish individual is not that sophisticated about automotive mechanics. Okay, I think that's a reasonable assumption. Are there exceptions? For sure. I mean, one of my chavrusas is a top-flight auto mechanic, for example, but he's few and far between. Okay, most of us rely on someone else, and many of us don't even have what you might call basic information about a car. Okay, it sounds very chauvinistic, but what do guys usually say about women? So they say, "Oh, listen, it's not me. So don't get upset with me." Say, "How does a car work? A car works because you turn the key." Okay, and more than that, I don't want to know from.
Okay,
and that's called, by the way, that's called a turnkey solution. You don't want to know anymore. Okay, now, are there women mechanics? For sure. Is it something that's in male-female DNA? No. Okay, but I would go so far as to say among us, even the guys have no clue. Most of the time. So it could be that Shomer Pitayim, because after all, who's speaking is David HaMelech. So maybe David HaMelech is also saying, even in those areas where a person might have expertise in a whole slew, a whole panoply of topics, ideas, subjects, whatever it is, there are certain things they're not going to know. Even there, when a person, maybe it's not a matter of IQ, it's just a matter of information. A person's ignorant. So, Shomer Pitayim, maybe even in that case. The reason I'm saying that, because the very next word is daloti. When I was poor, right? And then the lead, Yehoshia, that Hashem saved me. So it's, again, by juxtaposition, it seems that perhaps
he's
talking about himself. That in other words, when I demonstrated certain things where I was not all that sophisticated, it says David HaMelech. Imagine if David HaMelech wasn't sophisticated, what about you and me? Okay, nonetheless, Shomer Pitayim HaShem. And specifically, right, Daloti, when I was poor, Yehoshia HaShem saved me. So when was David poor? Okay, when he was running away from Shaul, right? He had to go to Nob. Remember that from Tanakh, right? He had to go to Nob just to get basic food and water. Okay, he went to Avigail, right? Avigail's husband. I'm trying to remember his name offhand. It's not coming to me immediately, but he asked for basically some food, and basically he wound up saying, you know, me David, who is this guy? Okay, which of course enraged David very much, and Avigail had to basically beseech David not to attack. So there was a time when David in fact was living day to day on a subsistence level. Okay? Alright, next. Shuvi Nafshi Wenu Chachi. Okay, now if you're bothered by the chaf, just you as you should be, also it's in the next sentence, next line, Hashem Gamal Alaychi. The chaf doesn't belong. It's like we've seen earlier, it's poetic license. But remember, David is the Mishorer. He's the singer of Israel, right? So basically, he took poetic license. Now, for example, the Piyutim. Okay, there's probably 20 people on the planet who can read the Piyutim and understand them. I'm not one of them. Okay, because some of the words are made up. Some of the words don't exist in any other context. All right. So how do they do that? How do the Paitanim do that? The answer is it's poetic license. And that's really what you have here. So, Shuvi Nafshi Unu Chachi, that my soul, okay, return my soul to its rest. Right? It should really be Limenu Chati, right, as you would know. But again, for poetic purposes. So David is talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu putting him in a state of shalva. Okay? No matter what kind of tzarot, what kind of misery he was facing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness extended to the point where David was able to find shalva. Right? And how do you know that's the way to interpret it? Because look at the very next words. Ki Hashem gamal alaychi. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has acted with kindness toward me. And again,
what is this to you?
Right?
But it's Alaychi. So the translation, I would not go with you, but it's Alaychi, like, just like,
that
you
makes
know.
More sense.
Yeah, I would say that. Okay?
Like, I'm reading it three times, I'm like, we're going from singular to plural.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say that he's really talking about his own soul. Because it says Shuvi Nafshi, right? Mm-hmm. And then it says Hashem Gamal Alaychi. So he's really talking
about the soul.
Well, the soul, the soul, thanks to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, returned to your rest.
Right.
But it's my soul. Not she.
When you say to your rest, to me it sounds like the soul should have peace.
Correct.
No, it sounds worse than that.
It's almost like that. Yes,
it
I know.
A full-time rest.
I know. and by the way, the reason I'm going with this is because of the juxtaposition between Zion and Chet. Okay? Ki hi latzta nafshi memavet, for you have saved my soul from death. So I have trouble with, you know, some of the standard translations that you would see in Zion, because he's obviously talking about whose soul? His soul. And just like shuvi nafshi, right? So perhaps it could be this way. Return my soul to your rest, but it's my soul, right? For Hashem has dealt with Gimelot Chasadim towards you. Okay, it could be that. What are you doing if you're doing that? It's a personification, right? You're turning the soul into almost its own entity, which is an interesting question. So, in other words, I'm not saying the translation here is completely off base, but it really depends how well you and how tightly you want to read Zion and Chet together. Okay? One thing is clear, that Gamal is Gemil Chasadim, which means what? Kindness without cause.
How come when they go Hashem Gemul Al Gayim?
Right.
Is it the same root, Gamal?
Is it Gimel Mem Lamed? Yeah.
So, but that's what you mentioned. So.
But I'd actually, you know, before I give you an answer, you know, I'd rather definitely double check it, because context is so important and it's so determinative of meaning.
It's meaning vengeance.
Right. So, but see, that would mean to bestow. See, like you know how many times we've had words that are subject to different kinds of meaning depending on context?
Well, so, Gamal is also a camel.
Also a camel, but he's not talking about that.
No, I know, I'm just saying.
Right? So, but I would suggest that the likelihood is there he's saying, divvy out, bestow, right, vengeance on my enemy. Right? That's what it would mean. Because Gimel Mem Lamed basically means to bestow. And we think usually of Gomel Chasidim Tovim, and we only think about the idea of kindness. And just because the word Gimel Mem Lamed is like ligmol, like a mother nurses a child. So that's how it's certainly used almost all the time in Tanakh. But like everything else, there are exceptions. Okay, so it's a good question. So again, the key is there. The takeaway is really context. Okay, but that's a good point you made. Okay, next. Up to Pasuk Chet. Ki chilatzta, okay, nafshi mimavet. Because you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have saved my soul from death. Okay, what was the all but certain death from which David's soul was saved?
Goliath.
Well, Goliath would certainly be one, but there at least, I think he had a fighting chance, right? But I mean, in other words, if things would have gone totally according to absolute nature of things, he had no fighting chance. Okay, so it was, but at least he had this ability, right, to use the sling. But I think where he had the least opportunity to save himself was with Shaul, because Shaul, unfortunately, while he was a great, great, great person, right? Shaul became unbalanced, is the only way you could really say it.
Can I remind us of the story?
Excuse?
Can you remind us of the story?
Oh, there's many, many, many prakim. The story basically goes is that Shaul realized that David really was going to be king after him and not Yonatan. And when he realized that, he only had one desire,
to get rid of
David. And that was to kill David. Okay? And so he was, so David fled from Shaul, and Shaul chased him everywhere. And remember we mentioned Nob before, where David went to try to get food and so forth? That was in Ir Kohanim. And what did Shaul do? Just shows you the extent of his instability. When he found out from Doeg HaEdomi that that the ear Nob had given sustenance to David. What did Shaul do? He literally, completely, totally obliterated Nob. Okay? So, and certainly, what would he have done if he would caught David unaware and so forth? Okay? So, that's the story in really, you know, Tom's seat.
So how was he saved?
Well, because there were situations where it was just moments before Shaul could have gotten him. I recently saw a documentary where when Winston Churchill was flying back from the United States, I believe it was, to a meeting in the United States to go to England. There was a navigational error. It took him within 5 flight minutes of where the Nazis were in France. Okay? So the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, could have killed him so readily, right? And, you know, yet that didn't happen. So is that a nace? Probably it is a nace. Okay? And what would have happened in World War II without Churchill? So too with David HaMelech, I think there were situations very similar in kind. Okay? All right. So, Ki chalatzta nafshi mimavet, you've saved my soul from death. Et eini mindima. And again, the idea that obviously David felt completely abandoned. He felt completely miserable. Okay? And he felt that there was really no hope. And yet, he never gave up with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? Zeke Levan Vehu, right? He never stopped believing, and that even his tears, okay, his tears abated because he realized that Hashem was going to be there for him. And et ragli midechi, and in all the situations where he could have in a sense, fallen. He could have tripped. He could have stumbled from simple exhaustion. I mean, we've all been there, where we're so tired, you cannot walk a straight line, right? And I mean, how many times have you been personally, you know, saved? We don't even know. We don't even know how many times that's happened. But David, being the Baal Emunah that he was, he recognizes that Hashem saved him from death. He's kept him, I would say, really, et eini min dima. He's saying, you saved me from depression, right? Because we're not talking about a cry here and there. Et ragli midechi. No matter how I could have stumbled, you saved me. Okay? And as a result, the next pasuk is extremely reminiscent of Avraham Avinu. Et halech lifnei Hashem. I will walk before Hashem, be'artzot ha'chayim, in the land of a living. Anyone remember offhand pretty much what the pasuk says in Sefer Bereshit? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Avraham Avinu? Okay, that's true. I can't argue with that. But there's another pasuk when Avraham is told that it's time to get a brit milah, and he says, "Hitalech lefanai," okay, walk before me, okay, and yeh tamim, and now you will become, okay, perfect, okay. That happens to be in Bereshit Yud Zayin Aleph. Okay, this is when he's about to get the brit milah. He didn't have a brit milah until then. Okay, so the idea of becoming perfect in the sense of finally removing the orla and becoming tamim in the sense of the particular organ that represents a degree of creativity that now is being dedicated to Kutcher Bricho. That's what's going on in a Brit Mila. It's not just an operation. Any more than, for example, as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, when you're dealing with Yoredeya. So Rav Soloveitchik once said, do you think Yoredeya is about pots and pans and spoons? You think that's what Yoredeya is? He says, no. Yoredeya is about incredibly sophisticated concepts that once we know the concepts and we understand the Torah, then we can apply it to specific instances in the physical world. So the same thing here. The Brit Milah is representative of a whole number of things. But one of them, the most obvious, is Tamimut. Okay? So the famous question was asked, and I forget exactly who the Roman thinker was who asked from one of the great Rabbanim. It may have been Rabbi Akiva, but I'm not positive. So the question was asked, listen, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Jewish people to be perfect, right, and to obey his Torah and so on and so forth, how come he created you, okay, without already having a Brit Milah? And the answer is that, well, when we give our children a Brit Milah, then we join HaKadosh Baruch Hu, become Shutfim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Maaseh Bereshit, right? We join Hashem in perfecting the world, okay? So that's the idea here, that in terms of Avraham Avinu. And clearly, clearly, David HaMelech is calling on that. Yes?
If that's really the case, yeah, like, that's why we do the Brit Milah to become part, wouldn't it be more logical to have it when the boy is 13, when he can make the choice, as opposed to the parent making it for you?
Okay, good. Good. A good question. And that is exactly what happened with Yishmael. Yishmael had his Brit Milah at 13.
Well, that's because that was the first time.
But Arabs ever since, who are Mohammedans, right, who follow Islam, right, Muslim, right, they keep following that.
Right? Are they 13?
Yes. Yes, they do. Yes, I would say ouch is in order. Yes, indeed. Okay, but the point is the point.
Don't they
really
say when a baby is born, it's both the parents and Hashem takes to make the child.
Oh yes. So
I'm saying, so that's why maybe the parents get to make that decision.
Exactly correct, and of course you can always fall back on the fact that it says it explicitly in the pasuk.
Okay, that's the best.
That you know, you can always fall back on that. Okay, so why is it on the eighth day? Because the Torah says so. Okay.
Well, you know why.
Is it one of those?
And we know why.
Is it what?
The blood body factors at its highest.
That why is it the eighth day and not? Yes. Why is it the eighth day, not the ninth day, and so on and so forth?
What is it said?
What?
The clotting factor is at its highest on the eighth day.
Right.
And that's what Hashem told.
Right.
I'm sure Avraham Avinu.
Well, you know what? Whether it is, whether it's not, we have two places in the Torah where it says so. When the Brit Milah is mentioned in Sefer Bereishit, by the way, just so you know, it's not yet a mitzvah. It's not the Brit Milah is not a mitzvah until Parshat Shmini. Okay, that's when it becomes a mitzvah. Okay, and that's it, and it's not as explicit as in Bereishit, but the reason why you don't have mitzvah per se in Sefer Bereishit is because we didn't yet have the Torah.
But didn't Tzipora?
Yes.
Wasn't that before Shmini?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, it's before Matan Torah, right? Which is why that whole story is so confusing. Mm-hmm. Like, what did he do wrong? Right. And yet that, to be honest with you, that's probably like 2 hours to go through it correctly. And we're just not going to do that right now. But yes, you raise a very good question. Now, Lava Mephoshim, raise your exact question. Sort of along the lines of, what's the problem? This is before Matan Torah. There was no mitzvah of Brit Milah. Good question.
But yet she knew to do it.
Sure, she knew what to do. Right, 100%.
You saw what your father did and your grandfather,
right,
and your great-grandfather.
But remember one thing that's interesting, too. Moshe was not directly from the family of Avraham. Did the family of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov did it? Mm-hmm. perfectly good sense. That was a Masorah that they had within the family. But it was not transformed into a mitzvah that all of Klal Yisrael did until later on, until after Matan Torah.
Did Aharon give his son a present?
I don't know.
Well, Moshe was not a direct descendant?
No.
Not that you were going to approve it.
Well, he was a descendant of Levi.
He came from Yaakov.
Right.
Right, from Levi. But it wasn't the...
Yeah, but Yaakov came from...
But you have to understand... All right, so here, let's clarify. All right, let's...
I mean, we all came from... All right,
you guys ready?
Let's
clarify, okay? There's two different Masorot early on. This is basically Rav Soloveitchik Torah, okay? There's two different Masorot. There is the Torat Ha'avot, mm-hmm. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, their family, directly, okay? And their children, directly. Now, the Brit Avot, which is a fascinating conversation altogether, the Brit Avot was only in effect, this is based on the Ramban and Rav Soloveitchik, the Brit Avot was only in effect where? In Eretz Yisrael. Go outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Brit Avot was no longer in effect. What's the biggest proof of that assertion? Who does Yaakov marry? Rachel and Leah. Can a man marry two sisters?
He's outside of Eretz Yisrael.
Exactly.
Yeah, died right before they got that's the
proof. That's exactly the proof that there's Brit Avot. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea of not Brit Avo, but the idea of Brit Am Yisrael, when does that take place?
Only
Har Sinai. So you have this in-betwixt period. Okay? Now, there is an interesting idea, though.
Because we weren't worthy yet? Because we didn't have the Torah, we literally weren't worthy yet?
Well,
I mean, we had to prove a lot to Hashem. We had to go through a lot.
Even though they didn't have the Torah, they knew the halachos, and they were learning, like they had Yeshiva Shein Meiver.
Yeah, but what do we talk about in terms of Shavuot and getting the Torah? It's the geirut of all of the Jewish people. Correct?
Yeah.
So we weren't even keeping kosher, which is why we had to eat milchiks.
So what did they... Well, that's because they were slaves and you know...
But if they would have been keeping, right, the Brit Avot, then they would have been keeping kosher. But they didn't. I mean, all this is very difficult because we don't think this way.
Abraham was the first, quote-unquote, Jew, right?
Well, was he?
Well, after his bris, he was.
Was he?
Well, that's the thing. He didn't know, so he wore a talis on Shabbos. He didn't know he should keep Shabbos.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have Jews into Matan Torah. All you have is you have the Mishpacha of Avram Avinu.
Well, he was considered Ivri.
Avram Ivri, but what does Ivri mean there?
I'm just saying.
The Hebrew.
Right.
From the other side.
Avram.
The other side of the Euphrates. Right? That's what he's considered. But he wasn't yet a Yehudi. You don't have Jews. And it's very difficult.
Until Matan Torah.
Yes. But, however, you ready? At the same time, Chazal say that Avram Avinu kiyem kol Torah kula. Afilu, okay, Erev Tavshilin, which is rabbinic. How did he do that? So did he have to? No. He chose to. Okay? So I hope you're finding... I mean, this is all a very interesting conversation, which I had not planned on doing.
Sorry.
No, I'm not speaking about this on Shabbos. No. No. We'll just leave it as a no. Okay, it's real easy to say it that way. All right, next. Pasuk Yud. Okay? Hamanti ki adaber. Okay? Now again, remember we said before about David being a big Baal Emunah? Mm-hmm. So look what he says. Hamanti, I believed. Ki adaber. So I spoke. Okay? And I spoke, and basically what I'm looking at this is that he cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not that, you know, he didn't sit there and go, you know, pass the butter. Okay, that's not what he's talking about. Hemantiki adaber, I believe, so I spoke. I gave, in modern terms, I gave voice. I gave voice, right, to my emunah and in tefillah, I spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? And what did I say? And again, tell me who this reminds you of. Ki aniti ma'od. For I am exceedingly humble. Right. Va'ish Moshe. Right? Anav ma'od, etc. So there's a lot of slightly oblique, but not so oblique references in what David is saying, where in a sense you really see why he's a continuation of earlier times. Okay? Here's a very interesting one. Yud Aleph is a fascinating pasuk. The Chazan sings it, and so therefore we only know it as a song. We don't focus on it, but there's some really fascinating stuff going on in this pasuk. Ani amarti b'chavzi. I said in my haste. Now, by the way, chavzi is a word you know. You don't know you know it, but you all know the word chipazon. Right? It means great, great, you know, running quickly, fleeing. Right? Kibbe chipazon, right? He's talking about Klal Yisrael leaving. Right? Leaving
Mitzrayim.
Okay? So, ani amarti b'chavzi. I made a flash judgment. I made a knee-jerk reaction. When everybody was trying to kill me. Right? And I said, koha adam kozev. What's kozev? Okay, so you notice the connection between kozev and Cosby. Well, I didn't mean to say that. Okay, so right? Kozev, right? Shkarim, right? Shkarim. What are shkarim? Liars. I said to myself, everyone is false. Everyone's liars. Now, what does Rashi say? This.
But isn't the only one whose truth is God? So obviously, some people are going to not tell the truth some of the time.
Yeah, yeah. But what does he say? Kol Adam Kozev. Right? It's like, it's not like you can fool some of the people some of the time, and some of the people all the time, you can't fool mom. No. This is, he's saying, forget it. All men are liars. You know, now, I would not have been able to say this on my own, because you would have said, Rabbi, it's off the chart. Rashi says, quote, Afilu Shmuel HaNavi, right? Even Shmuel HaNavi, who had anointed David as what? Melech. When David was fleeing from before Shaul, what did he say? He said, I'll never be king, I'm going to be dead. It's not going to happen. So it must be that even Shmuel was lying to me.
Wow.
Imagine. Okay? And yet, what do we know? Hemanti ki daber. But I didn't, I was pushed, you know, we use the word today, in extremis. I was pushed to my ultimate human limits. But nonetheless, hemanti ki daber. I believe, so I spoke. Okay. Now, by Yud Bet, the whole dark, dreary, boy, this is grade 3 weeks type Torah, right? On the cusp of the 9 days, all of a sudden everything is beginning to get a little better. Ma'ashiv la'Hashem. Call, right? Let me just take my glasses for a second. Call tagmulohi alai. What can I possibly do to repay HaKadosh Baruch for all the good things that he's done for me, all the favors that he's done for me? Okay, because after all, he was able to write this particular one of the Tehillim, which means he's obviously very much alive, and he goes on, of course, to be king and so on and so forth. So he goes, how can I possibly repay HaKadosh Baruch? So he says, here's a pasuk that you all know, right? Kos Yeshuot Esa, right? I raise my cup of salvation. Uveshem Hashem Ekra, and I call upon the name of Hashem. In other words, he never gives up hope, and he wants to demonstrate his loyalty, his fealty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what is he really doing when he does this? What does this remind you of? So I'll give you a question, a conceptual question. What is the one major thing. Two words. I'm making it hard, I'm sorry. But it's only two words. What are the two words that Hanukkah and Purim have in common? Prisumenisa. Exactly correct. And what did you say? Alanisa. Same thing. Good. All, you're all right. Exactly. See, I didn't even think of Alanisa. I think Prisumenisa. Fine. You guys are right. 100%. You're 100% right. And that's why David is doing this. In other words, I can't really repay HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. So he's going to profanize
you. Right? Exactly. I can't. There's nothing. I mean, what does Hashem need? Right? He doesn't need a new suit. Right, there's nothing you can do for Hashem per se except what? Be mehalel Hashem berabim. Be mefarsing Shem Hashem berabim. And what do we really call that? What is Pursume Nisa a subset of? Think Venn diagram. It's a subset of Kiddush Hashem. It's being mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Okay? Now, Yud Dalid and Yud Chet are exactly the same pasuk. We're going to be talking, probably not going to get to it this today, necessarily. We might. But we're going to talk about why the repetition, all right, in a little bit later.
Emphasis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It could be for emphasis. But you know what? I'll let the cat out of the bag. I'll give you my idea, and then I'll share you Ibn Ezra's later. My idea is a much simpler one. David HaMelech, as I said earlier, is the ultimate Mishur Rare. He's the ultimate singer, the sweet singer, right, mm-hmm. of Klal Yisrael. This, don't forget, and the reason why he changes the wording of the Hebrew was so everything would rhyme, everything would fit in. So therefore, why would he repeat, right, Nidarai LaHashem HaShalem Negda? Because it's a
refrain.
He said chorus, exactly. It's a refrain. Not a reframe, but a refrain. That's what it is. It's the refrain of the song.
But not all his songs have refrains.
No, correct. But this one seems to. All right? But it's true. I mean, you can't prove the exception necessarily by the rule. Right? But this is one of those cases where I think it works. All right, so now let's remember, in Yud Gimel, okay, in Yud Bet Yud Gimel, what does David want to do?
Pay back.
He wants to give pay it forward, pay it back, right? So, what does he say? Nidarai la Hashem Ashalem negda na l'chol amo. So David says the Metzudah David, okay, made nidarim when he was being chased by Shaul. And he basically, according to sort of the story behind the story, was that if you, Hashem, save me, bring this korban, that korban, and so forth. He was menad there. He was no there. And he said, I can't say it completely, I can't use the correct language. He basically said, I take a net there, that if I am saved, then I will bring those nidarim, the fulfillment of those nidarim to you. And so what he says, out of what? Out of thanks. So nidarai la Hashem ashalem, that my nidarim to Hashem I shall pay, negda, before, right, kol amo. By the way, the word na doesn't really seem to fit, except probably for cadence purposes. Okay, because na usually means please, and so forth. It's a little bit difficult to see how that word fits in here directly. I really worked at it, but I wasn't able to find it exactly how.
So,
okay, yes.
When I do those things, like I'll say, if X happens, then I'll do Y. Meaning, if X happens, I'll give tzedakah or
yes.
whatever.
She gives tzedakah first.
I always get yelled at and say that I shouldn't make bargains. I should do it anyway.
Well, not only shouldn't you make bargains, you shouldn't make nedarim. That may well be
a nedar. So, but
do you?
She's gonna start.
Yeah. See, that's a problem. Now, you're lucky. You're a woman, and you have a husband. You can always get out of it the same day. You can tell your husband I made a neder, and I I made a neder, and you know I'm really upset about it. And okay, so he can, he has the ability. Okay,
when I do that, but I can't help it. It's just something I do.
Okay, well, this sounds, it might be beyond the scope of this class, and I don't think in all safety I can go.
You a number of good psychologists.
Okay, so I'm not going to go there, but I still respect what you're saying.
Like I go, if I get the job, I'll do whatever.
Chazal are not happy with anybody making the, you know, nedarim.
Afterwards, you could give.
But
it
if
to
I would say bli
neder is fine because he didn't make a neder.
Plan to give a toldah
right.
To
Hashem. Exactly. Right, exactly.
Kind of like planning, like wow.
But
since I win the lottery,
since
I'll have a,
you know, since you can. Get yourself into a lot of trouble, right? It's better not to. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Let's see if we can get one more pasuk in before we have to go. V'yakar be'enei Hashem hamavta l'chasidav. Again, you see, mavta is not the normal way that you would speak about death either. Again, so you see how David HaMelech is using all this poetic license over and over and over again. Also, the word v'yakar. What does viyakar mean?
Precious,
right? But and I've never seen it used in any other way. Okay, no. And like yudimayata or v'simcha, right? Viyakar is usually something that's really, you know, joyful, precious. But here, you can't say viyakar be'nei Hashem amavta l'chasidav. You can't say it's precious in the eyes of Hashem the death of His righteous ones. It just doesn't work. So apparently,
maybe the righteous ones are the precious part.
Well, yeah, except it says hamavta. That's the problem. So apparently, this isn't again one of those words like kuf dalet shin that is subject to multiple meanings. And this is the only time I've personally ever seen it. But that doesn't mean that it can't be used that way in other instances. But here, viyakar means not that it's sought after or desired, but it means it's kasha, okay, or it's kashe, it's difficult. So Kodesh Baruch Hu, and of course Hashem doesn't have eyes, but it means sort of lifnei Hashem. It's difficult before Hashem for him to, in a sense, suffer the death of His righteous ones. Okay, so imagine what happened, for example, with Miriam and Aaron and eventually Moshe, and so forth. Now, I guess what's being said here is that David, in a sense, is attributing, why was he saved? Because David certainly didn't think that much of himself. He was an anav. So it must be David is saying, you know what? Out of complete, total, absolute kindness, Hashem saved me.